You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and Rudolf Steiner Press in England, who have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 314 by Rudolf Steiner, Physiology and Healing, Treatment, Therapy, and Hygiene, translated by Anna Moyse. This is, I'm going to call this Lecture 16, and the one prior to this, even though I said 14, is in fact 15. This one is, in quotes, Lecture 16, which is really discussions with medical practitioners, fragmentary notes, Part 1, and Lecture, in quotes, 17 will be Part 2. This Part 1 was given in Dornach on the 22nd of April, 1924. A member of the group asks about the significance of the latex in spurge and dandelion for treating leukemia. This had come to him during a meditation. Rudolf Steiner. It is, of course, also a matter of giving some consideration to the secondary phenomena, for leukemia can have all kinds of causes. If there is definite awareness that one is dealing with a disorder somehow in the rhythmic human being, then you'll be right. You'll get results. It's like this. Whenever you use products of the plant world that still have remnants of the ether body in them, and that is the case with resinous, with these latex-type juices, both of dandelion and spurge, it is also the case with wax, plant wax, for instance. With all these substances, you get a powerful action in the human rhythmic system. If, on the other hand, the primary cause is something which does not have its basis in the human rhythmic system, but in metabolism, these things merge one into the other, but one has to make the essential distinction, you are unlikely to get results. Everything that still has the ether body in it acts most powerfully on the inner mobility of the astral body, stimulating all activity in the organism from the astral body. And one can get results this way. It is due to the fact that the astral body is greatly influenced by these substances, and by acting on the ether body, establishes a balance in the ether body. Another question. What are the conditions in which a smallpox epidemic develops? It seems that the disease has lost its malignancy. I have observed such cases. What view is taken of vaccination in spiritual science? Steiner again. With a condition such as smallpox, the situation for the individual person is that the eye organization withdraws to a great degree from all three other human bodies, from physical, ether, and astral body. This powerful withdrawal, this weakening of the eye organization, may be due to the fact that the individual slips very much into the eyes of earlier lives on earth with his present eye. Because of this, the eye organization shows marked affinity to the spiritual world altogether. With smallpox, it is worth noting that there is some similarity with the things a person goes through with certain forms of initiation. Strange though it may seem, that is how it is. When someone gets to know the actions of the figures in the zodiac on human beings, really gets to know them inwardly, such states of insight involve powerful inner shocks. This the individual can at least go through in that it acts in a more controlled way, this situation with smallpox, more on the soul level, because human beings live very powerfully in the spiritual sphere with smallpox, though in a different way. We may say that with smallpox, the danger of infection is extraordinarily great. We should not carelessly plump straight for physical means of transmitting the disease, however. With smallpox, the mental disposition plays a particularly great role. One proof of this would be that one is able to protect oneself extremely well if one is able to contain oneself in the right way. I am entitled to say this because at the age of 22, I need not go into the circumstances, I tutored a youngster whose mother, suffering from variola major, was right next to us, with only a screen between her and the room where I was teaching. I did not do anything about it, continuing my teaching until the mother was well again. But I was quite pleased to do it, so that I might see how one can protect oneself if one absolutely treats the sick person objectively, like any object, a stone or a shrub, with no feelings of fear or other emotions, but treats them as an objective fact. With this, you counter the risk of infection to a high degree. The mental factor can thus play a considerable role also when it comes to catching things. I have actually never shied away from exposing myself to any danger of infection, and have really never caught anything, have never got myself infected. This did show that mere awareness, powerful awareness of the existence of a disease, can bring about the disease through the astral body. Powerful awareness of a disease can be the cause of that disease arising from the astral body. And smallpox vaccination. There we find ourselves in a peculiar position. You see, when you vaccinate someone, and you are an anthroposophist, bringing him up in the anthroposophical way, it will do no harm. It will harm only those who grow up with mainly materialistic ideas. Then vaccination becomes a kind of aramonic power. The individual can no longer rise above a certain materialistic way of feeling. And that is really why vaccination causes us concern, because people are garbed through with a phantom. The individual has a phantom which prevents him from freeing the psychic entities as far from the physical organism as in a normal state of consciousness. He grows constitutionally materialistic, is no longer able to rise to the spiritual sphere. This is what causes concern with vaccination. Statistics will, of course, be quoted, and we must ask ourselves if we really must rate statistics so highly exactly in this respect. Smallpox vaccination has very much to do with the psyche. It is certainly possible that belief that the vaccination is effective plays an incalculably great role in this. If we were to replace this belief with something else, if we were to educate people in a way that is in accord with nature, so that they would be impressed by something other than that we are vaccinating them, let us say by taking them closer to the spirit again, then it would certainly be possible for us to be as effective against the unconscious imposition of, quote, "there's a smallpox epidemic here," close quote, with fully conscious awareness that, quote, "there is a spiritual element here, unjustifiable, yes, but I must stand up to it," close quote, which is just as effective. And we must altogether make the person strong in the face of such influences. Question: how should one handle this under the kind of difficult conditions in our area, with education and so on, having such a negative influence? Steiner again. Then you simply have to vaccinate. There is no other choice. I would be absolutely against opposing these things in a fanatical way, not for medical, but for generally anthroposophical reasons. Fanatical opposition to these things is not something we aim for, wanting instead to provide insight so that things might change on the greater scale. I have always seen this as something I had to combat when, with medical friends such as Dr. Asch, for instance, who absolutely did not vaccinate, I would always fight against this. For if he does not vaccinate, someone else will. It is utterly absurd to be fanatical in particular situations. Question, Dr. Kalisco. As a school doctor, I have to say that children starting school show a colossal inner restlessness, evident particularly in their sleep. The parents of these children, who are in their sixth or seventh year, complain that the children are plagued with nightmares and motor unrest at night, and have difficulties in going to sleep. What would this be due to? Steiner again. The states in which the children are, when they now start school, in Germany, that is, are due not to conditions in general, but to conditions relating to diet. These conditions, persisting for years now, seriously upset the powers of taking nourishment, an inner ability. Not what happens initially in the stomach, but the inner ability to take the chyme further, there, where it matters, out of the intestine. The situation is that these children are really unable to get their astral body to interact in the right way with the ether body. Because of this, they are not able, as a rule, truly to take the food they eat, even if provided by charities, into their organism. As you know, every food has its own inherent laws and must become inorganic at a particular stage in the digestive process. It is not known in external science that the protein we eat, vegetable or animal protein, is taken into the mineral state and then changed back into human protein. The whole process takes place in the nascent state, but it does take place. This conversion must happen, otherwise the process is not human, but foreign. We may say, therefore, that within the human skin, roughly speaking, there must not be anything except for direct salts which occur outside the human organism. Nothing within the human skin is external, except for salt. Everything else is metamorphosed. These children lose the ability to fully and properly organize their ether body via the astral body at the very time when this ether body becomes free. It comes free at the time when they enter primary school. This is the cause of their digestive disorder. They have processes belonging outside the human being inside them. And things like this must be quite rationally combated physically. We have the medicament we produced at the time when we had some particularly serious instances of such children. I think you'll always get excellent results in this direction. You'll remember the small, pale boy in class 2. How is he? And there's a reply. He's a lot better. Steiner again. He is pretty good now, relatively speaking. Response. We have also used it for many other children. Steiner again. That was the next occasion which arose. A pale boy, already given up by the medical profession. He was said to be close to death. We gave him the medicament, calcium carbonate and phosphate. It turned out that this takes digestion forward in a quite outstanding way. Internal conditions improve with it. Dyspnoia and breathing difficulties will always appear if the astral body is not able to work properly. Dyspnoia develops when it is held back and may also be the cause of hidden anxiety states. Readers aside, I'm pronouncing this word D-Y-S-P-N-O-E-A as dyspnoia. My apologies if that's wrong. End of readers aside. All this can improve with the medicament. It is of a kind where we can say that it is an extraordinarily good medicine when someone is no longer able to benefit from his food, though he is eating it. Person has a question. What do you do for a spinal paralysis? Steiner again. What are the symptoms? Person asks the question some more. Only sensitivity to pressure over the affected vertebra. X-rays show that it may have fused slightly on one side, and the vertebra now is this, shown or drawn, plate 8 left, rather than its normal shape. Steiner again. It is, of course, difficult to get to the heart of things when the condition is so highly localized, unless we go back to the primary cause. Which vertebra is it? Response, the sixth thoracic vertebra. Steiner again. Has there been any demonstrable mechanical insult? Response, no, but the condition derives from pulmonary tuberculosis. Steiner again. But changes in the hilar lymph nodes? Response, the X-ray shows largish shadows in this site, which enter into lung tissue in a scattered way. Steiner again. How old is the patient? Response, 35 years. Steiner again. Has the problem persisted for a long time? Response, for about 3 months. I have 4 such patients, all of them women. 2 had a trauma by falling down the stairs onto their back. For the other 2, the x-ray might lead one to conclude that the problem comes from the lung. Steiner again. Is there no evidence of other vertebra being affected? Response. Not a single one. In one case, it is the 10th. In others, the 6th. These are adults, about 36 to 39 years of age. In the case of a child, the origin is traumatic, and it is also traumatic for a young woman of 20. Steiner again. In such a case, one will have to try and see if the lung, the cause does not lie there, of course, somehow does not have enough room at some point or other, perhaps because it has expanded. And you will indeed find something or other in this case that concerns the unfolding of the lung. And it will then be highly probable that you find expansion in some part of the lung, widening out, reciprocal to this shrinkage. It is a shrinkage process. It may perhaps not be in the region of the lung. It could even be in the bone or one of the ribs. You'll have to look for it. It will then be a matter of using something which can even out the formation of the human body. We do have one substance which is absolutely perfect in making up for trauma. This is tobacco. Injected in dilute form, it proves to be the principle which corrects deformation. If you want the medicament to be freely active in the organism, you'll need phosphorus. In this way, you can be sure of achieving healing processes. It may be said, absolutely, that healing processes will be achieved if the individual concerned is less than 28 years of age. But it is not impossible that they will also be achieved at a later age, especially with women. And if you get very stubborn situations with marked resistance, you would need to get the people concerned artificially brightened up, lightening their powers of growth, their vital energies a bit, and so helping the medicine to act. This, I think, is what one might do in such a case. Reply. Going back to what was said about syphilis, I'd like to ask how one can relieve a patient who has been given mercury and silvarsen of the damage done by those drugs. Steiner again. Extraordinarily much of the damage caused by mercury can be removed. Give the patient a very hot bath daily, or every second day, letting him sweat it out completely, thoroughly in the steam. This stimulates the organism to an extraordinary degree to defend itself against the mercury. It is necessary to fight the mercury even in the bones when one has been treated with it. I expect you'll all have heard that tiny droplets of mercury are demonstrable even in the bones when someone has been treated with mercury. You'll realize that the effect is adequate because the bathwater will turn black with the mercury that is released. Did you not notice this? You can't fail to notice. For one can't understand why the bathwater is getting so dark. If that does not happen, one would have to have an arsenic bath, adding about 5% of water containing arsenic to the bath. Again, let the patient take a hot bath, and above all see to it that the peculiar smell of ink is actually smelt by the patient, giving him a sensory impression. And readers aside, there is some text missing. End of readers aside. You will need a follow-up treatment in such a case. The mercury may have been almost completely removed, but the destructive tendency it brought with it will remain in the organism. You have to consider that mercury has an extraordinarily powerful action on the human organism. You have to consider, what is mercury to the human organism? If you study embryonic development, you'll have an ascending embryonic development, that is, rising from the ovum to the developing human being, and you have a descending development, something which drops away, is destroyed in stages. The regulator of this destructive process is the human being's mercurial inner nature. If it were to happen that there are too many vital energies, you can throttle them back with mercury, which constitutionally works to destroy the human being. This destructive tendency must be combated in the psyche. If you can induce someone to study a wholly abstract science, regularly so. For instance, half an hour's geometry, dutifully every day. This would be the follow-up treatment. Clear thoughts, logically combining and separating, challenging the mind and helping to develop inner activity rather than giving oneself up passively to the world. This lively inner activity really needs to be applied for a long period. You will then be able to cure someone of the mercury powers. And there's a question. Women sometimes have nodular indurations in the mammary gland. Would it be safe to use viscum prophylactically in that case, even if the diagnosis of cancer is in doubt? Rudolf Steiner again. Did you find that prophylaxis caused any kind of damage in such a case? Response. You once said that with this medicament, which may be suitable in a case of illness, there is also the danger of provoking something in the wrong case. Steiner again. We use viscum injections in quite a specific way. Let us assume the wrong diagnosis has been made. This can happen. Of course, you won't use prophylaxis when a diagnosis of cancer in its early stages has been made. As soon as the tendency is there, prophylaxis can no longer do harm. But let us assume there has been an error. We give 7 injections in succession, then there's a pause. If there really had been an error, we would immediately see this, because a kind of carcinomatous inclination will have developed that would disappear as soon as we give the second sequence of 7 injections. We would then go no further. Any inclination which developed would regress again when a process of a similar nature is applied. If you are careful, there is absolutely no way in which you might cause any harm with viscous treatment. Question from Dr. Kurler. I talked with a lay practitioner about the treatment of cancer. I told him that I believed viscum to be a medicine for it. He replied that this was indeed the case, but one would have to add something else, wild thyme. Without this, it would not be possible to get to the problem with viscum. Wild or shepherd's thyme provided the opportunity to do so. Rudolf Steiner again. Did the man know this from personal experience? Reply from Dr. Kurler. I got to know him because he had achieved a remarkable cure. A girl who was almost blind, came to see him. He does iris diagnosis. It is not clear how he does this. He has 750 kinds of tea. It is really difficult to talk with these people. One characteristic is that they are enormously optimistic. He said one can cure everything, including cancer. He did not ask how we do it, but said, with mistletoe. He told me he had once walked in the country with some friends and come across a cherry tree with mistletoe. The tree was stunted, cancerous, and the man said to himself that mistletoe had great healing powers. Rudolf Steiner again. Viscum certainly is the specific for carcinoma. Nothing one can do about it. But of course, since every illness turns into something different, because every organism is in a particular condition, the medicinal agents are in given cases helped by adding something else. It is possible that he got a cure with mistletoe. He did not give it by injection, and so he probably needed to add something. But given by injection, viscum is the specific agent. You have to consider the differences, however, as to whether the mistletoe comes from an oak, a cherry tree, or some other tree, perhaps an apple tree. The important thing is, of course, also that the use of mistletoe extract truly depends on actually enhancing the medicinal action. I do not know if you've seen that we are not seeking to use viscum in such a simple way, but need an apparatus for it. We first set the extracts in motion vertically, and then have a horizontal rotation enter into this, see plate 8 center. What we must achieve is that the mistletoe extract comes in drops, and as it drops, meets the rotation, and in the horizontal rotation combines again with mistletoe extract, so that a special structure is produced even in the smallest cycles. The actual healing principle for the mistletoe arises in this process. Yes, it is an effective medicament in itself, but it only becomes the absolutely specific medicament in this complicated process. It can only be a matter of a complicated case of the disease calling for the addition of wild thyme. For a pure carcinoma, which is complete in itself, is it not like influenza, for example, where there are all kinds of other things as well? It is a condition complete in itself, and a medicament which is complete in itself will deal with it. It is interesting to note that someone discovers this simply because the things he told you and the things you said are but a mask, not a mask he knew of, for knowledge can only be gained in sleep by such individuals. Quote, "It came to him in his sleep," close quote, as the saying goes. He went to sleep in the expectation of finding a mistletoe. He would then recall this unconscious prophetic experience just as he came to mistletoe. A conversation came later that was quite irrelevant to the business. We have to understand that a degree of foreknowledge is possible, especially in a case of sickness. Let me remind you of the case given by Schleich, where the individual concerned knew that he would die the next night. Question from Dr. Kurler. Basically, it became clear that he also heals people by another method. He said it had given him no peace. He did not think that I would get any further. Steiner again. He does not give injections. You cannot touch cancer if you give mistletoe by mouth. This will rather touch the psyche. But you do come upon a malformation in the etheric body that is reflected in damage to the sensory functions. You cannot cure internally by giving mistletoe by mouth, only by injection. I understand what he is telling you. He does not dare tackle it. Another comment from someone else. Is the cause of cancer the same for women and men? Is the cause different in the upper and the lower human being? I think I noted that the medicament gave satisfaction with cancer of the stomach, but not with cancer of the uterus. Success was evident with cancer of the stomach in men. With cancer of the uterus, the business drags on. In some cases, we cannot get at it. We have always injected in the periphery, also with cancer of the uterus. Steiner again. The situation is, of course, that we do have to make a distinction if we give the injection further away from the tumor site or get very close to it. If you get very close to the focus, you will get a more rapid result than when the cancer is in a location where you cannot get close. Comment again. You can get much closer if it is cancer of the uterus. With cancer of the stomach, you are much farther away. Steiner again. Yes, that's right. But on the other hand, communication between surface and stomach is much greater than between surface and uterus. The uterus is more of an internal organ. The difference in results is, however, not due to any difference between men and women. There must be other circumstances. We have to exclude all sources of error. It is definitely the case that some of our medicines have got a reputation of being less effective. The way in which they were formerly produced made them less stable. I think this is no longer the case now. They will no longer be less effective when they have grown old. Comment. With some of the medicines, we are still at the experimental stage. Steiner again. It has rather to become evident to me that the cancer medicine, the way it has so far been manufactured, loses a great deal when it is a year old, but it is absolutely effective if it is not so old. This matter would also have to be excluded, taken up and excluded as a source of error. Perhaps one also needs to use a considerably larger dose with cancer of the uterus. Comment. A member of the audience wanted to ask a question concerning a young woman who is now 29 and went insane when 18 or 19. As a child, she had always been recalcitrant and disobedient. Now she had grown quite dull. She would be wild, particularly during her periods. In the time when she grew duller and duller, she also grew bigger and bigger. She now weighs 97 kilograms. So she was a naughty child, as we might call it. And then between the ages of 18 and 19, her waywardness dullness, and nonsense, grew very much worse, not reacting, raving during her periods, so that she had to be put in a straitjacket. Then she grew duller and duller, less and less lively, bigger and bigger, her periods being regular. She was treated with thyroid extract, with the result that the dullness and weight gain grew less. Steiner again. These symptoms all indicate that her eye capital organization was greatly weakened, and it is highly probable that in such a case the eye organization is strengthened by giving a course of silica, a course of silicon. One should advise to make it a double treatment, silica by mouth and, above all, silica baths. Also equisetum, which is a good thing. It is probable that this will achieve something with her. Comment. She was given silica for a time, no baths, 2 years ago, but there was no change. Steiner again. I would consider silica action by baths of value, above all because it would be specific in its action if brought into play. The peculiar rhythmic states that arise with silica would restrain the weight gain, and they would also combat the dullness, making her easier to deal with. It is also possible that she may be in a state where she does not take up silica. In that case, one would have to try a phosphate in very high potency, potassium phosphate. One would need to get the things active again. Comment. In response to a further question, Steiner again. The silica in about the sixth decimal, but use actual quartz by mouth. Equisetum for the bath. Comment again. Question concerning a neurasthenic patient. The problem went away very well with formic acid injections, but recurred this year, and would not go away again with formic acid injections. I finally lost my way and removed an ingrown toenail. Things got even worse after this. I tried formic acid once again, enhanced with silicon, but I did not succeed. The pain grew intolerable from the foot up into the calf. The type of pain varied, rhythmic on one occasion. I had to give morphine injections, increasing the dose greatly. I would hardly touch him to keep the pain at a tolerable level. He was no longer able to sleep. He sat there holding his foot, complaining of horrendous pain. I tried alternating foot baths. The foot had to be amputated at mid-calf height. I'm asking because the process is, unfortunately, about to develop on the other leg now. What can one do? Steiner again. With something like this, we must look for the primary cause. Comment again. He says it happened when he was in the army and usually did not have decent shoes. He is 47 now and often had to lie on wet ground. Steiner again. But in that case, the pain surely did first appear not in the leg, but perhaps in the abdomen. It is perfectly possible that the whole situation is due to a deformation at some point in the intestine, that he got hit by shrapnel, fell off his horse, bumped into something, and that the deformation in the intestine comes from this. This intestinal deformation characteristically migrates downward and provokes conditions like those you have described in the legs, first in one, but then also shifting to the other. This will usually end in tuberculosis of the bone. But we can do something in that situation with the agent which acts against deformation, tobacco, in a case like this with tobacco enemas. Comment. He does smoke quite a lot. Steiner again. That has nothing to do with it. Tobacco smoke does not make an impression on the organism similar to the one you get if you give tobacco by injection or enema. It is an altogether different action on the organism. With smoking, the tobacco does not have opportunity to exert its re-deforming action. Comment. A boy, now 11 years old, learned to walk at 1 year. Was also able to talk a little. When 2 years old, he was rather close to an exercise, shooting with cannon. They say he's been deaf and dumb from that time. His speech is an incomprehensible babble, and he hears absolutely nothing at all. Is it still possible to do something for him? He can walk and actually looks very intelligent. Steiner again. Otherwise, there are no problems? except for being unable to hear and talk? How is it if some impression or other is made on the eye, EYE? Comment. In that case, he reacts like any normal person. Only the ear and his talking are subject to change. Steiner again. What about his second dentition? Comment. Quite normal, at 7.5 years. Steiner again. So one would have to assume that the vitality of the auditory nerve was destroyed in some way. We do at least have quite considerable successes with Edelweiss, especially in the 10th decimal, or first in the 6th, then in the 10th, to re-enliven the auditory nerve. Failures have also been known, but essentially these were observed with relatively old people, not really with younger people. I do think that you may try this. It is indeed extraordinarily difficult to do something about these devitalized nerves, but with Edelweiss, one may certainly get results on occasion. Comment. A woman suffered some kind of shock during the war. She thought her fiancé was dead. She was alone at home and had no one to whom she could talk about it. Since then, she's been epileptic. The seizures always come just before she has her period. They involve biting her tongue and so on, quite typical. It is over as soon as her period starts. She is in an institution for epileptics, although her seizures come only before her periods. Steiner again. What treatment does she have? And the answer is missing. Steiner again. You start with belladonna in such a case. If it does not help, move on to reindeer moss or lichen in the 6th decimal. And finally, inoculate fly agaric. It is most difficult to say anything definite, particularly in such a case, unless one sees the patient. There may be all kinds of causes. Comment. A 50-year-old man had a hard time in earlier years. He suffered from rheumatoid arthritis for 11 years, and one of his brothers died of it. Now a change is still evident in the left knee. Until 2 years ago, he would have states where the blood rose to his head. A definite change came 2 years ago. He has put on weight, and then this rush of blood to the head disappeared. Instead, something he would refer to in short as asthma developed. He has breathing problems, has to gasp for air when talking. It is my impression that the business is now located in the bronchi. Rudolf Steiner again. At age 48, before the rush was to the head, now it is to the chest. Is it the case that the man changes color a bit now and then, only slightly so, turning a bit blue, perhaps? Response is, it's possible. Steiner again. It is highly probable that the man has been too much in a position to change the oxygen he took in into carbon dioxide, and therefore would always have too much carbon dioxide in his blood. You can check if he does not feel relieved if given air containing more oxygen. If that proves to be the case, the situation will be quite clear. The man is producing too much carbon dioxide, and we need to give him... what does he do? Response, an engineer. Steiner again. Silicon in the first decimal, that is 5%, and ask him to make some mental effort for about half an hour after taking the silicon. He may then improve. He will put a brake on his overweening capacity for producing carbon dioxide. We have to come to a conclusion now. More of the same kind tomorrow. Comment. I do not find it helpful to have this way of asking questions. The individual gains much, but the others do not. The questions should be more general, something more interesting. So we should do things a bit differently tomorrow. Would you not agree, Dr. Steiner? Rudolf Steiner again. I am preparing to consider any question put to me. Every question could be answered by giving a whole lecture. When the first person put a question, I could have gone on to discuss the matter until now. But in that case, only one person would have had her turn. I think it was quite a good thing to hear a variety of things. It is not, after all, a matter of our satisfaction, but of the audience's. Comment. I think that this is something like having a clinic at the university, because the way of asking questions does not allow the other question to come about as to how we can develop powers of understanding. Steiner again. It would come about if a question to this effect were to be put. Tomorrow, then, let us have a question to this effect right away, and then it can be that way. I do not think that it is entirely useless to consider this question, but other answers do also arise. We merely put such a value on them that the audience may be satisfied. Comment. Would you say something about deepening the diagnosis? We can have many different thoughts about one patient. Many questions then arise, and one often has the problem of deciding what is to be done. It cannot be done intellectually. The will must be there to make a decision. My question is, would it not be possible to hold this intellectual will impulse back at that moment, so that it may come to one what needs to be done? Would you be able to say something about this? Steiner again. You mean how the diagnosis may be made more transparent? Comment. There are a number of possibilities when it comes to treatment. You can't decide if you should use vegetable or mineral medicines. You have to come to a decision. It should be possible to approach the patient on a deeper basis and let all these ideas come together, so that you will then know that is the right thing. Steiner again. We will make something up tomorrow and then develop an idea for diagnosis. And this is the end, I believe, of what I am calling Lecture 16, even though in fact it is just Discussions with Medical Practitioners, Part 1. And I will be finishing the book with this last, let's call it Lecture 17, which next coming up will be Discussions with Medical Practitioners, Fragmentary Notes, Part 2.